Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to today's conference call regarding the final financial statement for 2020 of NFON AG. At this time, all participants have been placed on a listen-only mode. The floor will be open for questions following the presentation. Let me now turn the floor over to your host, Sabine Prüser.
Thank you. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and a very warm welcome to our call also from my side. My name is Sabine Prüser. I am the Head of Investor Relations. Joining me today are Klaus von Rottkay, our CEO, Jan-Peter Koopmann, our CTO, and Petra Boss, our CFO. Klaus will present you first parts of our growth strategy 2024, followed by the presentation of the final results 2020. The presentation will last about 30 minutes. As always, there will be an opportunity to discuss your questions afterwards. At this point, please allow me to point out that the growth strategy will be presented in detail this afternoon during our Capital Markets Day. With that, let me turn over the floor to Klaus. Please.
Thank you, Sabine. Good morning, everyone. It's my pleasure to announce the financial results of 2020. And since I'm somewhat new on the board, so I just started in December as CEO of NFON, allow me to share some initial observations in my, you know, of my first now 100+, 130 days with the company before we dive into the numbers. So first of all, obviously, we all know and feel that every day that we're still living in, you know, special times. The pandemic has been going on for, I think, about, you know, like 13 months now in terms of, you know, lockdown, like overall a little bit longer. And across the geographies that we operate in Europe, the pandemic actually still affects business. And mostly, you know, obviously hit some verticals a little more than some others, but we kind of, you know, call it that, you know, like, okay, it affects projects business most of all. So many companies have, you know, implemented quick fixes. We're all aware of some of the quick ramp-ups of OTT solutions in the space when, you know, companies struggled to move everyone home. Obviously, we also had some of those projects where we could help customers to stay productive, you know, during remote working conditions. But overall, you know, the business is not back to normal yet. This actually has led to, you know, a somewhat, in my opinion, too cautious investment approach in the last year, 2020, which, you know, later on is reflected in our EBITDA results. As you know, obviously, you know, we couldn't operate at, you know, at full speed across all channels in all countries, just simply because, you know, business were not open for business everywhere. And some partners, you know, even had to, you know, discontinue operations or ramp down operations, at least for the time being. Good news is, you know, some of that, you know, many companies have, you know, learned how to deal with the situation, are, you know, basically in full swing again, at least across many verticals. But some geographies, and, you know, may call out Italy for that part, you know, still doing good business, but many customers are delaying actually, you know, activating seats they may even have contracted due to the pandemic. So this is something that, you know, affects the growth a little bit, the growth curve, you know, from, you know, end 2020 to beginning 2021. But we all think that, you know, the overall trend, you know, of the innovation in the business communications market that, you know, we'll spend some time later on, has actually been strengthened and on a midterm horizon accelerated. Just right now, it doesn't feel so everywhere. But as I mentioned, you know, there are new IT players that have entered, you know, the communication space, you know, namely the two most famous examples are Zoom and Teams. And we think that this is actually more of an opportunity than a threat to NFON's business. So we've actually learned, you know, there's some, you know, new challenges that companies are experiencing where we can actually help them integrate, you know, a heterogeneous environment into the, you know, new business communications era. And this is something that actually helps NFON and obviously helps our customers. I'll, you know, spend a little bit more detail on that. In terms of growth, we, you know, are firmly committed to continue our growth trajectory over the next couple of years and even accelerate them. There's also an additional component we would like to, you know, bring into focus. You know, in the past, we've, you know, mainly focused on number of seats, which is a very important metric, which we'll continuously to monitor closely. But there's an additional quality of growth component that I think is important. And that is also why, you know, we invest more into R&D going forward and product development, because we also want to, you know, benefit from the next waves in the transformation of the business. As I said, I'll spend a little bit more time on that. And last but not least, I think that, you know, and I feel, you know, the personal need to articulate this. I've been really enthusiastic about the level of passion and commitment that I've encountered here at Enfone in the team. Although, you know, most of them working remotely under not always, you know, optimum conditions, are, you know, burning for the company, about for our mission, and to help our customers to become successful regarding their communication capabilities. So I think this is something I still feel very warmly about, and I just wanted to articulate it. But that said, you know, why the team is motivated, let me articulate the mission that we're actually striving for. As, you know, we have come together and, you know, basically looked at the market, where it's going, and, you know, what role Enfone can and should play in this market. And our mission is to be the leading provider of voice-centric business communications in Europe. Now, it may not be so surprising to you that obviously we want to have a leading role in Europe, which is, you know, very consistent with the DNA of the company. But we felt the need to articulate that the field that we are playing in, you know, is not cloud telephony any longer. Only it's, you know, voice-centric business communication. And to clarify a little bit what we mean behind that, let's look what's happening in the market. So there's actually, you know, the traditional separation of telephony providers and, you know, somewhat called IT players that, you know, we can, you know, segment roughly in, you know, the collaboration players, you know, traditional, like, for example, you know, like traditional, you know, IT collaboration, like Microsoft or Google, or obviously the typical video conferencing OTT players like Zoom, and the business application players that, you know, focus, you know, merely on integrating, you know, different applications together. And this space, you know, used to be rather separate in the past, and obviously it's growing more and more together. Again, as said, accelerated quite a bit through the pandemic. And that's like an area of overlap. So, you know, you really cannot separate these spaces anymore. Customers, you know, operate in all of these areas, and they're looking for a solution to cover as many of those needs that they have now or may have in the future, to do so in a rather seamless way that really helps their business within their own boundaries and within those, you know, that they have with partners and customers. And this is the area that we aim to play in, and this is where we have our leadership aspirations in. All right. So how do we do that? Well, mainly, you know, we have to be clear, you know, what our differentiators are. So, you know, we have articulated that. I will, you know, give a little bit more detail to, you know, all of these categories. But, you know, we really know what it means to, you know, stand out in this integrated business communications market. We know that even, you know, our portfolio now may address the majority of the needs the customers have. You know, this market is evolving, and there's more opportunity from additional capabilities. So we will continue to enhance, you know, our portfolio, and actually, you know, more than, you know, continue, actually double down and accelerate the development, you know, towards a truly, you know, smarter workflow solution across what we call nowadays kind of like several workloads beyond the UCaaS space. And lastly but not least, and it's important, we are a 100% channel committed company operating across Europe. We are proud to have a very large and committed partner network. This is something we would like to scale more by optimizing our way how we work with partners and make partners even more successful, and just also simply increasing that quite a bit. And investing more to accelerate growth. All right, coming back to number one, so what are our differentiators? I alluded to it, so nowadays integrated business communications, it goes beyond, traditional, I would say somewhat limited workload-specific offerings from formerly PBX to, I'd say, nowadays more video conferencing-focused, towards solutions regarding omni-channel customer engagement, classical contact center cases, for example, integrating with different applications and doing so in a seamless way across across the different workflows and applications that customers have. This obviously should be rather seamless. So an outstanding user experience is key when operating, I would say, rather complex environments and make them look transparent and rather simple. So this is something we'll continue and, continue to focus and double down on this dimension. And as I said, as a leading channel provider now, we will obviously, use and expand that strength to become even better. And, we obviously want to support our partners to become even more successful with us, because it also means our customers will be more successful, and that, basically reflects also on our success. With that said, there are like five growth pillars that, I'd like to, in a simplified way, at least tell you about how we plan to go about it. As you know, a little less than 3 weeks ago, we raised additional capital because we saw the opportunity for additional invest to accelerate growth at Enfone. So therefore, to strengthen product development, we will increase significantly the technical resources we have on the product development side by more than 50% just until the year end of 2021. And that it will obviously help us to boost the innovation pipeline and make sure that down the road we have additional premium solutions and additional capabilities to sell into our existing customer base, plus attracting obviously new customers with that. In order to get that to the market, we need to double down our marketing invests by also increasing them more than 50% this year, with a strong focus on our channel activities. We will continue to grow our traditional stronghold in the SME business and extend it towards enterprise businesses above 250 seats. This is something we have, already done selectively in the past, and our platform has become more and more powerful over the last couple of years. We've seen examples of customers taking these into five-digit number of extension scenarios. This hasn't been traditionally our focus, because obviously the SME market is the biggest one and is still very big in terms of how much potential there's left. But it's kind of like a natural evolution of our technological development and increasing power of our platform, that we can also easily scale up wherever we can do that in a scalable fashion, rather than doing project-based and tailor-made solutions, which is not something that's core to our business model. Then in terms of our pan-European focus, it's about time we look a little bit closer towards the East. Eastern Europe offers some interesting opportunities of markets that are even lower in penetration than the German and the Italian market, with interesting growth rates. These are areas that, you know, have been traditionally somewhat underserved by many our competitors. So I think it's a good way to, you know, to select our battlegrounds in terms of where we can achieve the fastest and most profitable growth. Last but not least, I call it technology partnerships. This will obviously complement and enhance the, you know, increased investments we want to do into technical resources by making sure through partner solutions we can deliver more value to our customers. And this has actually three layers. One is obviously we can partner with, you know, partner with other companies and license their product to build them into ours. We can secure crucial technology for our, you know, own native cloud tech stack through minority partnerships, or where we even see the opportunity to increase our own growth and the upsell opportunity into our significant customer base, where can we can think about majority investments in other companies. So this is, you know, the kind of like the focus area when we think about M&A activities, to do so in a way that not only enhances our growth, but also in, enhances and improves the ammunition we basically build up on our technology side to conquer the growth challenges ahead. With this, maybe let me dive into the number part that, you know, obviously you probably pretty familiar with. It's still worth reflecting a little bit on the growth history that NFON has shown over the last couple of years. Just a little bit more than 3 years ago, we had 250,000 seats, which still was a, you know, significant number already, and more than doubled this number to more than 500,000 seats until the end of 2020. There have been many important milestones on the way. Let me point out, that, you know, went public in 2018, which was an important milestone for the company, doing so with a clear pan-European approach and establishing operations in 15 countries within the year of 2019. There have been, you know, obviously significant milestones achieved also on the number of customers and partners we are operating with. Like one of the latest highlights was in fall of 2020 when we actually opened a nearshore center for product development, which actually now helps us a lot realize our ambitions on strengthening our innovation pipeline even further. And last one I mentioned about 3 weeks ago, based on our plans to accelerate growth through, you know, additional investments into product development and channel go-to-market initiatives, we raised additional capital, which we will deploy in the months going forward to improve the growth trajectory of the company. What does it mean in numbers? We landed both, you know, number of seats and recurring revenue within our guidance, and recurring revenue share also, you know, almost, you know, on the higher end. But, you know, this basically illustrates that, you know, we have a strong and robust business model that delivered also in a difficult year in terms of economic conditions through the pandemic. When we reflect a little bit, you know, on how we actually do revenue, obviously the majority of our revenue is consists of recurring revenues in a classic SaaS model where we just earn by the number of seats, as we call it, or PBX extensions times ARPU. But obviously it's not only the PBX that generates revenue, but it's also premium solutions on top, or airtime if the, you know, the customer receives this through us. And we have a smaller portion of non-recurring revenues, which, you know, a large lot of that is from hardware, which actually, you know, it was a somewhat, you know, a slow year 2020 because many companies just, you know, reduced investments. But more importantly to us, there are also really important fees in the non-recurring revenues, which are activation fees for new seats or installations of professional services, installations of premium services, where we also need the help of consultants. So this is also, you know, not just one of old legacy business that we, you know, would like to reduce, but this is very important business that really also helps us to make sure that the recurring revenues keep growing continuously. All right, let's look at it in, you know, category by category. As I mentioned, seats increased by 17% to about 525,000. The underlying ARPU actually, you know, went up a little bit after eroding slightly over the last 3 years, which was bolstered mainly due to, you know, more voice minutes due to the remote working conditions. Customer churn, despite these you know, difficult conditions, remained approximately constant, around 0.5% only per month, which is very low and obviously leads to a, you know, very healthy customer lifetime value. In terms of revenues, we, you know, grew total revenue by 18% to 67.6 million, which, you know, notes significantly above 2019. As I said, non-recurring revenues, and that was mainly due to, you know, less hardware sales, were a little lower than the year before. But, you know, this is the category that, you know, we can, I would say, like, that doesn't really affect our long-term business. The healthy part, recurring revenues, actually increased quite nicely by close to 24%, and you know, thus increasing the share of recurring revenues substantially. In terms of cost of materials and gross margin development, gross margin obviously grew quite a bit. Also, you know, in terms of increased air times and on the other hand, basically increased by lower hardware sales with lower gross margins. So it's a very positive development. And I usually being asked, like, do I foresee this continuing in the long term? There's actually, and I like to point this out here because the question usually comes, we also sell increasingly through wholesale partners that actually shows a lower ARPU and a lower gross margin, but we actually save because we, you know, don't pay commission to these partners, so it actually doesn't, it leaves the overall profit margin, EBITDA margin untouched. So this is, you know, kind of like always important to keep in mind when you think about that. In terms of personal expense development, it was about flat year over year. I think this is something where we, especially with, you know, looking to the product development side, we will aim for an increase this year, something, but that will, you know, with the additional scale of business, obviously then, you know, will fall back to, you know, the 40% range, where we think this, you know, should remain. In terms of marketing, that actually, you know, was a little bit too low, in my opinion, for last year, because that means, like, you know, a lot of the pipeline has to be rebuilt this year, you know, once the pandemic gives us green enough light to do so. And therefore, also, we foreseen a significant increase this year back to the relative spending levels of the years before the pandemic. Sales commissions stayed about flat. This is, as I said, like, you know, we also always have to look at it, you know, in a way, like, you know, how our partner network evolves, but we want to grow across all three different categories of partners, from dealers to wholesalers and distributors, and see, this seems to be a healthy range. As all of this resulted in a positive EBITDA for 2020 at 3.5 million adjusted, which is significantly higher than the year before. Reasons for this was obviously next to the lower marketing expenses, other lower operating expenses such as travel costs, but and on top in the increasing ARPU through higher voice usage. We think that going forward, this is something where we see that it's proven how fast our business can be profitable if we want to. But in terms of future direction, we obviously aim for using this fast development we see in the market to opt for growth and rather invest this money into additional growth than, increasing the profit margin at this point in time. But as I said, it shows how easy we can switch to that mode. And all of this said, this ends up in a guidance for 2021, where we see that, we think our customer base will, develop at a rate approximately between 15% to 17%, which is comparable to last year. All of this obviously depends a little bit on how the pandemic is going to pan out. No pun intended. But it's an important parameter we are aiming for. Recurring revenues will be somewhat lower this year because obviously we are guiding only on the organic growth part, and that has to do with lower new seat growth at the end of 2020 due to the pandemic, which in our SaaS model will now reflect into 12 months of those lower revenues. But obviously we're investing to increase growth drastically, especially in H2 of this year, which will then positively reflect in 2022 growth numbers. And in terms of recurring revenue shares, we see them about stable in the mid 80s. We think, considering that we are optimistic that in H2 also, traditional hardware business will pick up again, that this will be somewhat lower, but it will remain approximately in the same ballpark. And with this, I'm happy that I stayed on time. I was closely watched, so I did my best to preserve enough time for you to ask your questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please press 9* on your telephone keypad. Please press 9* on your telephone keypad if you'd like to ask a question. And the first question comes from Knut Woller from Baader Bank. Your line is open.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my questions. And just to double check, I would like to get some more color on the enterprise segment. But I'm not sure whether that will be addressed in more detail at today's Capital Markets Day. So I would like to get more insight how you are planning to ramp up the sales force to address this market segment. Is that an invest? Is that via partnerships? And then also looking at the F&E side, Klaus, you mentioned that you want to invest significantly. If I remember discussions with Jan Peter correctly in the past, it was difficult to find an organic increase of the headcount due to scarcity of resources. So is that an area where you also look into for inorganic options? And then lastly, on Southern Europe, overall is still below a million in terms of revenues. You highlighted some of the reasons for that. When should we expect the whole Southern Europe region to cross the million euro range? That's it from my side. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Knut, for your questions. So, yes, I will go a little bit more in detail on those topics in the afternoon, but, I can give you the highlights now. So in terms of moving into the enterprise, I said, this is more of a natural evolution, driven by our, increased technical capabilities of the platform. So it's not something we are actively ramping up our sales force, but we're actually working increasingly with partners that also serve larger customers. customers. And as I said, like, as there are more opportunities arising from IT players entering that space, there are actually some traditional IT partners that are serving customers that have large, for example, MS Teams deployments planned. But, you know, the customers obviously have somewhat complex telephony installations that have grown over the years and need expertise to actually land a modern business communications setup, and usually are short in terms of voice capacity. So this is where we usually then partner and say, like, we can help you with our partner network that it can actually cover the site, and, you know, let's help the customer together. So this is, you know, very much a joint partner approach. And obviously, I'd say like the two main directions in the future are, you know, continue to build our platform, so on the technical side rather than the marketing side. And the second one is find and additional partners who will actually, you know, create their solutions that embed our technology where they address, you know, enterprises and additional verticals. So this is not a short term, we build up an enterprise sales force, because it's basically exactly what, you know, we are as a scaling cloud provider want to, you know, like avoid at this point, because it will defocus the company on the large opportunity that's still there for the next you know, whatever, half decade plus, and not do any individual, you know, customer specific R&D work, but rather invest into the overall innovation that will benefit then the whole of our customers.
Thank you, Klaus. Can I just ask you a quick follow up to that? We have seen that other players in the market also address the market, as you said, via partnerships. Also by partnerships with legacy PBX players. Is that also something you're thinking about as a way to scale your business?
Honestly, no is the short answer. There are many reasons to that. You know, usually like customers, it doesn't necessarily mean that you know, customers will prefer your solution only if you're partnered with, you know, the solution they're unhappy about. And, you know, as I said, like, there's a lot of legacy business involved that actually, you know, best is to start from scratch to a certain extent. And this is means often throwing a lot of good money after bad, you know, being very expensive to rip and replace these things. Obviously, it's a, you know, it's a kind of like a brutal approach to do so. We think that currently there is still enough opportunity to do it kind of like in a value-driven way rather than a buying, you know, into it way. Regarding your second questions on product development, maybe I just hand it over to JP, who will be, you know, who can answer this question most authentically.
Hi, Knut. So the good news is you remembered correctly that from our past arguments, there is a scarcity in the market out there that remains and still remains. However, that's one of the reasons why we last year very successfully opened up our R&D department in Portugal, which is going very well. We already hired a lot of highly motivated people. Moreover, what we're doing is we are heavily increasing our own recruitment department with additional technical recruiters, so we're putting more focus on this, also spending more money on this, which is necessary. We are getting increasingly interesting for young developers as well, because now we're also entering for them very, very interesting markets and technologies, more modern technologies like UCaaS, video, and so on, which is something which many of the young developers are very striving for. So that makes us more interesting. But yes, your question was whether or not we are also looking for inorganic growth in the development department. Maybe you allow me to remind you that we already have done so very successfully with Onwerk last year. And while this is not necessarily the biggest focus in terms of M&A, this is still something that we're looking for. So should we see a company that fits us and that would allow us to increase our R&D force, then yes, definitely we would also go down that route.
Thank you.
Okay. And the third question, you said basically, when do we expect to cross the million in Southern Europe? So is that approximately right? So I think obviously, you know, depends a little bit how much how much of that we want. If we want to, we can do it this year. That depends and organically, but it depends a little bit on the profitability on that approach and obviously how the pandemic pans out, because these are actually just happen to be the areas that are still, you know, most heavily affected. But, you know, according to just the natural evolution of our business there, this actually should be, we should be able to reach it this year.
Thank you.
And the next question comes from Gustav Vorwerk from Berenberg. Your line is open.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for taking my questions as well. I have some more finance-related questions, and then I'll leave the strategic questions for this afternoon, if that's okay. My first one is on the capital increase and your funding for now. I'm wondering, after the capital increase, for how many years do you now think that the business is funded? And do you anticipate any step-ups in CapEx as well as a result of your growth initiative? So will this all be mostly sort of P&L-related investment, if you will?
Okay. So I think, obviously, we... very good question, because I can basically answer everything, you know, like anything truly. No, but obviously, you know, we, you know, have plans to, you know, invest the money organically, productively, but we will not hold there, obviously, but, you know, have a clear M&A appetite. So wherever we find interesting opportunities, we will go for that. As I said, like even on the R&D side, it will increase our CapEx, you know, in terms of where we invest into, you know, product development side. And on the M&A side, we are, you know, obviously, you know, want to accelerate our growth. Yeah.
Okay, and for how many years do you view that your business is not funded for this? Kind of how long can you keep investing for growth?
That depends on our level of M&A activity. If we didn't do M&A, let me put it that way, because we don't intend to not do it, we would be funded forever. You know, so basically our cash flow projections, you know, project that we can easily fund ourselves at an accelerated growth level from, you know, with this capital injection. But as I said, this is not necessarily our ambition. Our ambition is to spend faster where we see the opportunity to accelerate growth, but we don't need it.
Super, thanks. And then just one clarification question, if I may, just on the 50% increase in marketing investment on that you anticipate for 2021. What is the base for that? Is that for sales plus marketing or just marketing?
That's just marketing in this case. So basically the whatever, you know, I think, what was it? Petra, I think 7 million last year approximately. So add 50% to that, then you'll probably have it approximately.
Excellent. Thank you. Those are all my questions.
Thank you.
And next question comes from Stefan Bezan from Stifel. Your line is open.
Yes, thank you. Two questions, if I can. The first one is just to follow up on the latest one regarding the total OPEX. I think the total operating expenses were around 50 million euros in 2020. So I was just interested if you could guide a little bit on where you see the total OPEX in 2021. I mean, would that make sense to be sort of modeling an increase of around 15 million of OPEX in 2021? And, you know, anything you could be saying about the trajectory for the EBITDA over 2021 and perhaps 2022. And my second question, but perhaps...
Give me a second, Stefan. Sure. A good question. So you caught us right there, but...
Sure, that's okay. I mean, that can be addressed this afternoon as well if necessary. And my second question...
I cannot answer it. If you maybe give us, how about if we skip to the next question, come back to this answer in 2 minutes? Would that be okay for you, Stefan?
No, sure.
Maybe have a follow-on question, and we can answer this one later.
I could perhaps look at it differently. Again, just to follow up on the previous question, whether you're able to quantify a little bit sort of the increase in the market.
Stefan, I'm very sorry, but we barely can hear you right now. It's maybe something with your line on your end.
Oh, sorry about that. Is it better now? Not really.
I know. I'm afraid that's not working right now, Stefan.
Maybe we
take the next question and you maybe sort out your phone difficulties.
Okay, then the next question comes from Alina Köhler from Hauck & Aufhäuser.
Yeah, hi everyone. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, hi Alina.
Okay, perfect. I have a question on the ESDN phase out. In your key end markets, where do we stand right now? And once this transition has been done, do you think it will be more difficult to grow for you? And then the second question would also be on the marketing spend. You want to ramp up the marketing expenses. Can we already see this in Q1?
All right. Alina, let me try to give you an answer for your first question. So, in some of the countries, we actually have seen that the ESDN out it has more or less finished. We do not really see a big difference in growth there. However, neither negative nor positive side. Some other countries, like in the UK, for example, where they originally, I believe BT said 2025, they're going to be phased out. So they're still in the middle of the process. Deutsche Telekom, I believe, wanted to be finished for 2 years now or 3 years now. They're still in the middle of that. So I believe the keying out is still taking place. Now, in terms of whether or not it's going to become more difficult for us, frankly, I don't believe so. We are in the middle of a new disruption phase that we're seeing right now. So where in the past we've seen more people that wanted to change or had to change away from ISDN to a new technology, what we're seeing now is that we have people and customers who not have to change but want to change into a completely new environment, working and growing together with UCaaS and other services over the top, which helps our growth tremendously. Moreover, the ISDN phasing out was more helpful in terms of going from ISDN to SIP trunking, which we always said is more a bridge technology, and we are now seeing increasing demand for really going to the real step, which we said all along from the IPO, that after the bridge technology comes the migration to real cloud PBX technology and that migration. So that's what we're seeing right now.
Okay, that's very helpful. Thank you.
And the second question was on marketing spend, yes?
Right.
So, okay, if you can see it in Q1, no, you won't, because obviously, you know, we just had the capital raise done three weeks ago, but it's not, you know, like it wasn't really just an availability of funds thing. It's also a business cycle thing. Just in Q1, the pandemic was still, you know, holding back businesses across many regions, so it was just a bad time to do this productively. So this is something, it's happening now as we speak, and hopefully, you know, across many regions, and will just significantly affect, I would say, Q3 plus as of you know how we can all estimate how this is gonna develop out there.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. And then I think Petra wants to get back to you, Stefan. If you're hopefully you're back on the line and can hear us, then we would like to take the question regarding OPEX development.
Hello, Stefan. Sorry for needing some minutes, because internally we look at it and personal expenses and other OPEX separately, so we hadn't this figure in mind. OPEX in total, we grow a little bit more aggressive as we invest in all areas, so you can expect a growth rate by almost 40%, which comes close to 70 million in the end. Which includes marketing and sales commissions and all sorts of OPEX.
Mr. Bizan, your line is open.
Yeah, thank you.
The next question comes from Thomas Cowdery from Bryan, Garnier & Co.
Yes, good morning, everyone. A few questions, please. First one regarding CAPEX. Also, I see that your capitalization rate for R&D has increased this year to 71%, I guess, versus 65 or so the year before, if I'm not mistaken. Could you please describe what is your capitalization policy in R&D? If we should expect this rate to increase in the coming years or in 21 in particular, and therefore if we should see CAPEX increase significantly as well in 2021 versus 2020. That's my first question. The other one is for about growth per country in 2020. So I understand and von Age was, as you said, pretty, lower, at around 11% growing this year in revenues. DTS, however, was up much more significantly from what I see in 2020 versus 2019. Can you explain where this acceleration of growth in DTS comes from? I understand that there might be some issue of maybe consolidation, not having the entity consolidating over 3 months, but can you confirm the organic growth of DTS over the year? That would be great. And then please, last question is about RPU trend. So I understand you said very clearly that the RPU was, there was an uplift in RPU thanks also to the increased airtime over the pandemic here in 2020. What about the underlying subscription fee? Do we still see the downward trend that is driven by wholesale offers in particular also in 2020? Thank you very much.
Okay, so I think first question, who's for you, Petra, okay. Talking about the
regarding
CAPEX.
So we only started, I think, 1 or 2 years ago with activating the R&D expenses. And what we do, and that is our policy, that we look at each project very closely if we can activate it. So there are some premises we have to fulfill, but we can only activate something when we decide to activate it at the beginning. You can't jump into the middle of a project and start activating them. So you can expect an accelerating rate the next year or two, but then it will be stable though, and we have and want to activate all purely development costs, so we don't activate research costs, and we check every project and all what we do very thoroughly if it's fulfilling these premises together with the auditors.
Yes. Meaning like also the absolute, value obviously will go up with increased investments this year and obviously even more next year because of the bow wave effect of, 12 months versus, part of the year. Good. Second question was regarding the growth per country. Kind of like your question was like why DTS was growing so strongly. That was obviously a little bit, supported by the pandemic. Because of the SIP trunk business that DTS has and additional voice minutes that actually helped the revenues quite a bit. So it is true that you see like a strong growth there. And I think the third question
let me take the third one regarding the up trend. This is JP. I believe the basic question was whether or not the subscription fee downward trend that we are seeing is going to continue. First of all, let me please clarify that that's not really a downward trend. So when we look at the individual channels that we have, we do not see a downward trend in our subscription fees. What we see is that we historically and for the time being are only reporting a blended RPU, which means that the more successful we are getting in the wholesale channel, since the subscription fees in the wholesale channel naturally are a little bit lower. What this means that the blended RPU obviously is going to be a little bit lower, but that has been the case from the beginning. There's no real change in strategy in terms of the sales channels. The RPUs are quite stable, actually are stable, even more stabilizing and increasing a little bit. due to effects of increasing success of our premium solutions and, as you mentioned yourself, in terms of increased airtime during the pandemic. So the answer is we are very happy with the stable ARPU trend that we are having, or actually even hoping that we might be able to increase it a little bit in each of the sales channels. But in terms of the reported blended ARPU, since we are very keen on having additional success in the wholesale channel, obviously the blended ARPU is going to be going a little bit faster.
Okay, very clear. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay, the next question comes from Jan-Henrik Schmidt from Lois AG.
Hi, this is Jan-Henrik from Lois. Maybe just to follow up on the RPU situation. I mean, the RPU has been increasing in 2020 due to COVID. If you exclude that effect, could you give us a number of how much the RPU, the blended RPU, decreased due to the mix effect, and how long? I think you just mentioned that you expect, due to the mix shift, to have an decreasing blended RPU for 2021. Just wondering at what point the effect from the premium solutions overcompensates the negative effect from the product mix shift or the channel shift.
So it is obviously it's a lot of what would be if this had happened questions. So it's a bit hard to see how the RPU development would have been without pandemic. Our educated guess from the figures that we're seeing is that we would have had, as promised, a relatively stable RPU development. So we are happy that it increased due to the pandemic effects, obviously. But even without those, the RPU would have been quite stable. And we are trying to keep it that way. It really depends a little bit, as I mentioned, on the success that we're having in the wholesale channel. And that's a luxury problem to have. So the only real reason why the blended RPU reporting would be going down is because we are having tremendous success in the wholesale business, which honestly is something that we would like to see. What we are seeing is the premium solutions are already compensating quite a bit in keeping our RPUs high or actually increasing them. It's not an exact science, so I won't be able to really give you an exact figure on that.
All right, okay. And then on the marketing side, I think you mentioned that you're going to increase it by roughly 50% this year. Just wondering, how is marketing spent? So is that kind of like, do you have customer acquisition costs, which we can just calculate? So, I mean, if I do that, for example, we have around 90 euros per seat you're paying. Is that kind of like a good ballpark figure to assume further growth and then kind of like expect the marketing to translate into seat growth? Or how can we think about marketing spend and a translation into growth, just to kind of get a feeling of how much marketing actually translates in what kind of growth pattern?
Unfortunately, that's not that easy, and we don't have a very clear pattern, because what we do is that we heavily invest into channel marketing to gain new partners and to activate partners, but we won't have an immediate effect, because if you build up a partner network, it will be converted into seats later on in the next years. Additionally, for example, we invest into product marketing, which don't convert into seats at all, but only in additional revenues of selling premium solutions. So it's not that easy in our business, but what we can tell you that our lifetime value is substantially above our customer acquisition cost, but it's not a, and the other problem is that the customer acquisition cost can be scaled that easily, because when you have more activation costs, for example, for SEE, it gets less efficient because it gets more expensive. If you understand that. And so it's not that KPI which can be easily handled and predicted.
And on top of that, the customer acquisition cost, obviously, no matter how you would calculate it, no matter how exact it would be, it would greatly vary from country to country. Now, if you're looking into investments into the small countries, obviously the customer acquisition cost would be a pure theoretical figure without any real insight, but it would be extremely high. While in more mature markets, it might give you at least a little bit of a clue. But as Peter pointed out, due to the way we're spending and due to our channel approach, it's not really a figure that would give us a clear insight, so something that we're not using as such. But I can only confirm that no matter whatever attempts we make in our customer acquisition cost, our customer lifetime greatly exceeds all of those figures.
Okay. Now, I thought there might be some sort of rough formula that kind of like says, I don't know, like either in percentage-wise, 2% of marketing increase in regards to revenue translates into, I don't know, 3% revenue growth for the next year or something like that to kind of get the issue is basically that you can kind of like control your own growth path or profitability path by just shifting from one to the other. I'm just wondering how that ratio might look like. So where's like the optimum point of marketing expense ratio to get a good growth, and at what point further marketing spend doesn't really pay off in further growth, but rather go for profitability then?
Yeah, so it's like well understood. It's a point of ongoing discussion, and the fact is, you know, the elasticity of the marketing spend is a non-linear function, and it is so in every market, in every segment, for every solution. So we would, you know, love to, you know, scale it that easily, but that Gordian knot hasn't been cut yet. But I can assure you we continue to dedicate continuous attention to this detail.
All right, okay. And then lastly on working capital, have you been using factoring in the past or in 2020? And the working capital has slightly increased in 2020, especially due to the receivable sides. Just wondering, is that kind of like just a point in time situation, or is that some sort of structural change or issue?
That's easy to answer. We don't use any factoring, and it's only due to the given point of time at the annual statement. There's no structural observations we have or changes we made.
All right. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you very much.
There are no more questions. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please press 9-star.
Okay. Dear ladies and gentlemen, so as I said, we will have today in the afternoon our Capital Markets Day, and if you have further questions, you're very welcome for this day. For now, I may say goodbye. Thanks for attending our call today, and we wish you a very nice and sunny day. Stay healthy. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.